Hello, and welcome to our program, Senior Living, brought to you by AL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I'm Chrissy Mernon. During the next half hour, I'm reading articles from AARP Magazine here on AL Radio. And the first one is the cover story, Fans and Friends Forever. Lily, Jane, Sally, Rita, and yes, Tom Brady dish about their new Super Bowl comedy and the joys of having and being fans. By David Hockman. Together, they could fill a Hall of Fame with their statuettes. Lily Tomlin, 83, has Tonys, Emmys, and a Grammy. The accolades for Jane Fonda, 85, require a separate Wikipedia page to catalog them all. At 76, Sally Field has 3 Emmys, a pair of Golden Globes, and 2 Oscars. And then there's Rita Moreno, who at 91 is one of only 17 performers in history to have received an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony. The storied EGOT, between them, they are credited with more than 100 movie roles, accounting for more than $6.5 billion at the global box office, and literally hundreds of TV episodes, Broadway shows, and hit records. You might think that these legends would be so self-satisfied with their own stupendous success that the concept of what some might call fangirling, being an over-the-top fan of someone else, simply wouldn't apply. Think again. Take the case of Tom Brady, 45, the 7-time Super Bowl champion and football's most illustrious unretiree, who returned to the NFL this season just 6 weeks after officially calling it quits last February. Oh, he's remarkable in his work, just remarkable, Moreno says. He's at the top of his game and the best in his field, and beyond that, he's gorgeous, kind, and sweet, says Fonda. Your jaws drop at the skill level, Field says. He's like a great, big, beautiful, perfect 20-year-old that you'd want to be your son, gushes Tomlin. Fandom clearly has no expiration date, at least as it pertains to the holder of nearly every major NFL quarterback record. The women, along with the object of their adulation, appear on screen for the first time in the sports comedy 80 for Brady. It's a heartwarming cheer-from-your-seats romp about 4 lifelong friends and diehard New England Patriots fans who embark on a raucous late-in-life road trip to watch Brady play in the 2017 Super Bowl. Inspired by a true story, it's mostly a fun-loving meditation on goofy sports traditions, bonds built around tailgates, and the agelessness of passion. For the high-profile Hollywood friends who made 80 for Brady, the project was a chance to reflect not just on what it means to be a fan and what their legions of fans mean to them, but also on the decades these performers have spent respecting and rooting for one another. And how could they not? Since her early roles in Singing in the Rain, The King and I, and West Side Story, Moreno has brought exuberance to the screen like no one else. Fonda's appearances in films from Barefoot in the Park and Barbarella to Coming Home and The China Syndrome helped her become a leading actress of her generation. Tomlin broke through on television with comedy on Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, playing characters like the telephone operator Ernestine and childlike Edith Ann in an oversized rocking chair. Long before she and Fonda co-starred in the recent TV hit Grace and Frankie, they made 9 to 5 together. In January, they released another big screen comedy, Moving On. Field is credited with some of the greatest of all boomer hits, Gidget, The Flying Nun, Smokey and the Bandit, Norma Rae, Mrs. Doubtfire, Forrest Gump, and that's just in the 20th century. I guess you can say we've done okay for ourselves, deadpans Moreno. Sitting down for a revealing and frequently hilarious conversation with AARP, the 4 actors opened up about their famous friendships, the hero encounters that have intimidated even them, and why being a fan never gets old. So, for starters, are you sports fans? Lily Tomlin, we are now, she laughs. Rita Moreno, are you kidding? I'm a Golden State Warriors fan down to my bones. I've been to games, but usually I'll just holler and scream at the screen at home. It's true physical genius doing what those basketball players can accomplish. And I'm a nut for football, too, especially quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes. Jimmy Garoppolo from the San Francisco 49ers is also cute as hell. Beautiful eyes. Jane Fonda, I've been a baseball gal forever, partly because my husband's got me into it. Ted Turner owned the Atlanta Braves, and we went to many games. And Tom Hayden played first base with a local Los Angeles hardball team called the Hollywood All-Stars. Sally Field, I'm a longtime sports fan, and I think the world underestimates the huge audience that older women represent. I feel almost sentimental and teary-eyed about it. Football was always in my life because my boys, who are now very much men, always loved football, so I watched it with them. And now that we have a football team again in Los Angeles with the Rams, I'm back to being a big fan. But it's not just football. What pro basketball did during the pandemic by going into a bubble and how baseball continued and gave fans that outlet, I mean, it saved me. The women you play are devoted Tom Brady fans. At this stage in your long careers, what responsibility do you feel to your fans? Tomlin, I've got fans of 40, 50 years who write me or call me, and they're like extended family. One in particular, Niles, reminds me that we met 47 years ago at the Sun Theater in San Francisco, and he still remembers lines from my old monologues. At this point, he's not like a fan, he's sort of like a brother. I'm wondering when he'll try to get me to buy him a house. Fonda, I grew up with a father, actor Henry Fonda, who, if someone started approaching him to ask for an autograph, would literally run away. He couldn't stand being reminded of his fame. But you know who taught me about the importance of fans? Dolly Parton. When we did 9 to 5, I watched how she interacted, how she listened, how she truly cared, and how grateful she was, and I thought, oh my gosh, Dolly's right. Our careers depend on our fans. That changed me forever. Moreno, I love seeing someone's eyes gleaming because they recognize me. Recently, I was on a bus in New York and two young men said, hey, you look like Rita Moreno. I said, yeah, I am. They said, are you kidding us? I said, I am who you say I am. They wouldn't believe me. And I finally had to pull out my driver's license. Another big theme of this movie is the timelessness of friendships. What do your friendships with one another mean to you? Field. Most of us have known each other for so long and admire each other so greatly, we sometimes would forget we were making a movie. Just to get us to listen, to be quiet and get the scene done was a challenge. Fonda, Lily and I go back, wow, almost 50 years. I remember seeing her for the first time when she did a one-woman show in the 70s called Appearing Nightly. I was blown away by her then, and I still am. Tomlin, and I already idolized Jane. After seeing her performance in Clute, I ran out and got a Clute hairdo. Do you notice any differences in how younger and older fans respond to you? Fonda, more often than not, if I'm walking down the street, I'll see these young girls recognize me, and I know what they're going to say. I loved you in Monster in Law, the 2005 comedy co-starring Jennifer Lopez. With older fans, it's I loved you in Coming Home. Or they'll say, my favorite movie was Cat Ballou or Barefoot in the Park. That makes me happy. Tomlin, I don't have a lot of young fans, but there's nothing like people who have been through 40 or 50 years with you and know all the permutations of your characters. They want to know what Mrs. Beasley or Trudy, the street person, is doing. It's a bond that we can reach each other through. So you've all been famous for a while, but did you ever get nervous around another celebrity and ever ask for an autograph? Fonda, I was intimidated by Katharine Hepburn. My God, when she made On Golden Pond, she made sure I knew she was always top dog. Autographs? The one time I asked for one was when I ran into Muhammad Ali in the airport. My knees almost gave way in front of him, and I'd already won two Academy Awards. Tomlin, I've always been completely mad for Lucille Ball. In my 30s, I saw an article where she reviewed newer comics. When she got to Lily Tomlin, she wrote, I just don't get her. I could have wept. Some years later, a friend arranged a dinner with Lucy. I was terrified, but it turned out okay. Lucy told this wildly hilarious story about developing a bad toothache the morning she had to fly to New York and gargling with far too much brandy. And of course, by the time she got to New York, she was blotto. Imagine sitting at dinner with Lucille Ball acting out a story like that. She looked exactly like Lucy. We never met again, but I will treasure that memory forever. One more takeaway from the film is how enthusiastic people can be into their 70s and beyond. Does that apply to you? Field, you're never too old for the next chapter. Fonda, I think as you get older, you get better at almost everything. I love my work more than ever, and it feels more balanced now. I take things in stride more than I once did. things are a little simpler. Moreno, I will confess that I wake up smiling. Yes, sometimes I sit in front of the mirror and I go, yikes, who's that old lady? But then I'll put on some makeup and I'm absolutely amazing. The next story from AARP, the magazine, happily, hopelessly devoted. Avid fans over 50 share the meaning behind their passion. Fan of a BTS, a K-pop boy band, Dana Schulman, 76, New Preston, Connecticut. Owner, gift and stationery shop, and candy store. When I first became interested in the band in 2021, I was in a fragile place. It was the 6th anniversary of my husband's death, and the weight of the loss felt heavier than usual. Mindlessly scrolling through a mishmash of videos on Instagram, I noticed these young men doing amazing choreography and singing pop tunes in Korean. They gave me a jolt of energy that helped pull me up out of my grief. I started listening to BTS whenever I was low, in the car, at my desk, or dancing around my store. It's a world far removed from my own that I escape to, a private, joyful place. What has surprised me most is that I'm finding comfort from songs written in a language I don't even speak. Regardless of cultural differences, the band's message breaks through. It's going to be all right. I think everything comes into your life for a reason. Listening to the band's music made me feel good about myself. It gave me my mojo back again. I could be flirty. It made me feel more positive about things. My friend said I looked happier. It pulled me out of thinking, who am I without this man? No matter what life throws at you, you can still find joy. Fan of the Los Angeles Clippers, Daryl Bailey, a.k.a. Clipper Daryl, 54, Linwood, California. Motivational speaker and nonprofit founder. I got fired in 1992, and the guy told me that I would never amount to anything in life. I went home, lay on the couch, and turned on the TV, and they were saying the same thing about the Clippers. I said, this is going to be my team. We are going to ride and die together. In 2005, I thought of wearing a half-red, half-blue suit to the games because the NBA started making inactive players wear a sport coat on the bench. That suit has changed my life. I can't believe celebrities know my name. I started a charity to show kids growing up in the hood like I did the kinds of things that are available in life. We take the kids to nice restaurants, and one of my celebrity friends will talk with them just to let them know what's possible. Fan of The Sopranos. Pasha left at the location of the show's final scene, right? Azhar Pasha, 52, Meridian, Mississippi, physician. Growing up in Pakistan, I learned about America through TV and films. Mafia stories like The Godfather hooked me. I was fascinated by characters who could be both evil and sympathetic. When I moved to America at 24, discovering The Sopranos continued my education in American culture, but it also reminded me of home. Pakistan is afflicted with corruption, nepotism, backdoor deals, strategic favors. Seeing the same type of corruption play out in U.S. society felt strangely comforting. No matter where you are, greed and the battle for power appear. I also love the show because it's at odds with who I am. I'm an intensely polite person. Tony Soprano is the opposite. He is tough and brazen, and he tells it like it is. When a patient who is abusing drugs demands a painkiller prescription from me, I tap into my inner Tony to stand my ground. Fan of Cher, Faye Wobler, 54, Spokane, Washington. My earliest memories are of Cher. My room was cluttered with Cher dolls. The biggest punishment my parents could give me was to ban me from watching Sonny and Cher. When I was a young woman, there were no other women in the media or in my own life owning their sexuality so unapologetically. And any of her supposed imperfections made me love her even more. Cher showed me that you can wear braces and still have people swoon. She's like the big sister I never had, even though we've never met. Standing behind the bar, I imagine I'm Cher. She aims to entertain, but she doesn't take crap, and neither do I. And anyone who badmouths Cher gets kicked out of my bar. She's a bartender. Fan of the British royal family. Helen U. Gates, 62, Boston, Massachusetts, nonprofit consultant. I've been a royals watcher since the marriage of Diana and Charles in 1981. It was the fairy tale romance of the time, and I was simply swept up in it. Of course, it ended sadly. I watched Diana's funeral and was devastated, but I have seen her sons grow, marry, and have families of their own. On a torrentially rainy day this past November, I waited for more than 3 hours to catch a glimpse of Prince William and Princess Kate at City Hall Plaza in Boston. Despite the weather and having to stand for hours, it was a thrill, my first time seeing the royals in person in all these years. They're just magnetic. They have that royal posture and bearing. Even on a cold and rainy day, they were ramrod straight, not one hair out of place, clothes unwrinkled. William spoke about environmental advocacy, an issue I care about deeply. There are so many celebrities nowadays because of social media. Anyone can be a hero. For me, I want to believe in something. I want to believe in people. I believe in the royal family. I know they're controversial. They're flawed, like any human beings can be, but they have persisted through time. I've lived through their heartaches, their missteps, and their flaws, yet still they carry on. Fan of the Atlanta Falcons, Tom Dunn, 65, Oviedo, Florida, retired air traffic controller. When my wife and I got married and moved to Atlanta 40 years ago, we got season tickets for the Falcons. Everything kind of grew from there. For tailgating, we eventually came up with the Fambulance. We wanted to have a vehicle that I could load all the gear into at the start of the season and be done. My first idea was to buy a hearse, but my wife said she was going to take only one ride in a hearse, and it would not be to a football game. So, in 2003, we bought a used ambulance and decorated it with the team logo. When we retired and moved near Orlando 10 years later, we had to retire that Fambulance. I didn't trust it for the drive to Atlanta, so I bought a new Ford passenger van. We drive it to all the home games and meet up with friends there. I'm not one who gets upset all week if the Falcons lose, but I do jump and yell. I work out a lot of my aggressions. I'm not in condition to play anymore, so this is the next best thing. Fan of Seinfeld, Kim Mazur, 64, Palm Harbor, Florida. She's a human resources professional. Seinfeld is my family's way of communicating. My kids, all in their 30s, span states and continents, but when we quote the show, it immediately connects us as a family. We began watching Seinfeld when the kids were in their early teens. The sarcasm and snark shaped our family's sense of humor and provided a ready response for any situation. What message do you leave when someone doesn't answer that damn phone? Hi, Jerry, Mr. Steinbrenner's here. George is dead. Call me back. What do you say when a family member gets upset? Serenity now. As families grow up, kids have their own interests, friends, and eventually families. But it takes only one funny line to immediately reconnect you, put you back in the groove, no explanation needed. Fan of Earth, Wind, and Fire, Linda and Mark McFerrin, both 60, in Riverside, California. Linda's an administrative assistant, and Mark is a retired high school math teacher. Mark, we found the band before we found each other. We both attended the same event they played at in 1980 before our paths crossed. Linda, we're both big kids at heart, dancing and singing at any Earth, Wind, and Fire concert we attend. Mark, to the horror of our children. Linda, at this band's concerts, you leave the ego and identity at the door. There are young, old, different races, and even people with oxygen tanks, and everyone has invested their time to feel joy for joy's sake. Mark, you've got the horns doing their thing. You've got the bass player doing his thing. You've got the guitars. It's so full, and it harmonizes beautifully. An Earth, Wind, and Fire concert is my happy place. No matter what's going on in life, no matter how crazy things are, we can go to a show and know that for 2 hours, we're going to have a good time. The next story from AARP, the magazine, is cruise ships are revving up. It looks like 2023 is the year that vacations take to the ocean again en masse. The vessels are larger and more decked out than ever. Cruise ships are on a mission to recapture the seas. The COVID pandemic forced cruise lines to pull their ships into port, but now that health concerns have eased, passengers are returning. They are finding an industry reborn. As a longtime travel journalist, I have been on 170 ships, and I have seen how cruise lines can engage in a hospitality arms race. Before the pandemic struck, many new megaships were already on order, but the delay in launching means that 2023 will feel even more momentous for the industry. Come with us as we look at the crazy, huge world of cruises. Ship design, making big ships feel less big. There's an interesting paradox about megaships. The extreme sizes mean that cruise lines can add more and more things to do, but at some point, ships may become too large for passengers to easily enjoy. And so Royal Caribbean has divided its Icon of the Seas ship to launch next year into 8 neighborhoods, the idea being that you choose the section that suits your interest and mostly stay in that area. One neighborhood caters to families with children, for example, while another is meant for young singles and couples. Carnival Cruise Lines has adults-only spaces where passengers can enjoy some peace and quiet around hot tubs, pools, and bars away from the family crowd. Entertainment, Broadway shows, and ways to play on stage. The old Las Vegas-style revues are long gone. Now singers and dancers recruited from Broadway and London's West End appear in slightly truncated versions of Broadway shows such as Summer, the Donner Summer musical, which on the Norwegian Prima morphs into a big disco party with the audience. Daytime entertainment likewise has been updated. And while the old belly flop and hairy chest contest are out, a replacement has emerged. On Carnival's Mardi Gras and its sister ships, you can watch or play Family Feud live. Recreation. Board a floating theme park. Roller coasters are thrilling enough, but the one at sea gives you the sensation of flying above the vast ocean blue. Melissa Colby, 62, has ridden a coaster on Carnival's 5,282-passenger Mardi Gras. "The first time I screamed," says the preschool teacher from Jacksonville, Florida. "The second, third, and fourth times I was smiling and putting my arms up in the air." On Royal Caribbean's Icon, travelers will enjoy a water park with 6 slides nearby on an attraction that's a combination skywalk, ropes course, and thrill ride. You'll be able to strap on a harness and walk a plank. At the end of the plank, the bottom drops out, and you'll swing 154 feet above the ocean. Norwegian Cruise Line's new 3,100-passenger Norwegian Prima is topped with a go-kart track. Another attraction is a 10-deck drop in a waterless tube slide, mostly suspended off the side of the ship. Dining. Eat your way around the world. Food has always been a cruising calling card and has gotten better and more varied to reflect the growing foodie culture. Global flavors and vegan and vegetarian options are getting more play, and cruise companies have finally realized that their passengers might like to taste food from the destinations they're visiting, such as jerk chicken when they sail to Jamaica. To satisfy a whole lot of tastes, the Norwegian Prima has a complimentary food hall where you can choose from counters featuring Southern comfort food, Spanish tapas, or Indian chicken tikka, to name a few options. They are leading in trends that we are seeing on land and doing it so well, says Colleen McDaniel, editor-in-chief of the leading website Cruise Critic. Some cruise lines are adding new specialty restaurants that charge extra for upgraded choices such as sushi and aged steaks. Big culinary names may be involved. Emeril Lagasse has New Orleans-style bistros on Carnival's latest ships. A shrimp po' boy won't break the bank at $6, while the 3,260-passenger Celebrity Beyond and sister ship Celebrity Ascent will boast restaurants by renowned chef Daniel Bolad from $75 per person for 3 courses, $125 for 5. Over the years that traveler Jill Dill Vincent, 78, has cruised with Carnival, she has seen more sophisticated menus in the main dining rooms. "I love the lobster," she says. Her husband, Ken, 74, favors the desserts, especially the melting chocolate cake. Drinking, brewing up refreshment. The craft beer boom can't be contained by land. The latest Carnival ships have onboard breweries. Also in vogue, molecular cocktails that smoke and change colors. At a bar on Carnival's Mardi Gras, you can order the Crystal Ball, a tequila drink that arrives in a foggy orb. Norwegian Prima has a sustainable bar featuring drinks made with ingredients that might otherwise be discarded, as well as earth-friendly, biodynamic wines. Ports of call, beyond the beach. The Caribbean and Bermuda together represent 44% of the world cruise market, according to the Cruise Lines International Association, making them by far the world's most popular cruise destinations. For North American travelers, cruises to Alaska and the Mediterranean are also expected to be popular this year as passengers regain their sea legs. That's fairly typical. But what is changing is what travelers do when on shore. More sustainable and local experiences, says Roberta Jacoby, a hospitality and travel industry consultant. Cruise lines are fulfilling demand with cultural, adventure, multi-generational lifestyles and wellness add-on shore excursions via local operators. On Holland America Line and Princess Cruises ships in Alaska, you can go salmon fishing with a local fisherman, and after you reel in the big one, have your catch cooked by the ship's chefs. On a Caribbean cruise, you might visit an eco park and farm that promotes environmental education on St. Kitts, or skip the beach in favor of a green monkey encounter at a wildlife reserve in Barbados. Stay healthy while at sea. In the wake of the pandemic, cruise ships have upgraded their health and safety systems, from hand sanitizers throughout the ship to medical-grade air filters in the ventilation systems to robots that shoot ultraviolet rays to kill bacteria. But you'll no longer need to show proof of COVID-19 vaccination to board many ships, though unvaccinated travelers are still encouraged to provide a negative COVID test result. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which shut down cruising in North America from March 2020 to June 2021, ended its intense monitoring of the industry in July 2022, saying that cruise passengers can make their own risk assessment when choosing to cruise, much like they do in other settings. Here's what to expect. Cruise ship medical centers have been upgraded with equipment to test for COVID-19, and medical teams have added personnel to better treat anyone who falls ill, even severely ill. When a passenger tests positive, contact tracing commences. On some ships, security cameras will use facial recognition to aid in this task. On the big ships with thousands of passengers, you may be traced via an app on your smartphone or a smart wristband provided at check-in. Passengers who get sick will be confined to their cabins or cabins set aside for quarantine purposes. Meals will be delivered to those rooms. Wearing a mask is a personal choice. The next article from AARP, the magazine, Upfront, What I Know Now, Sam Waterston. The actor talks about climate change, Redford, and why being lucky is the best talent of all. From the start, my parents were teachers. My mother was also a painter. My dad taught languages and directed school plays at a boys' boarding school in rural Massachusetts. He put me in a play when I was six. It was magic. The boys treated me like their mascot, and I got to stay up late with my father for rehearsals and shows. That planted the seed. Learning from Redford. I learned the most about the art of acting from Katharine Hepburn, but as far as what the profession is like, it was Robert Redford. When we were doing The Great Gatsby, he asked me if I was having a good time. It was my first break in a great big movie, and I was absolutely over the moon. I told him so, and he said, "That's great. Enjoy it. Just don't ever think it's about you." It was a sobering thought because I thought my success was about me. But it's a transactional affection that show business gives you. You're making a mistake if you think your show business success is because you deserve it. Lucky in love. My biggest piece of luck was meeting my wife, Lynn. It was a blind date. We're both very suggestible. Somebody told us that we should like each other, and we obeyed. Your children see you. I think Lynn's and my theory of parenting was to try to be the best people we could and let our children see it. They see who you are and learn from that far more than anything you might try to teach them. And another thing, what I worry about most is climate disruption. As a kid, I spent summers by the ocean. It was right after World War II, and there were plenty of fish in the sea. That is no longer true. It's one of the reasons I became involved in the ocean conservation group Oceana. I think there's general clarity about what the problem is and what is causing it, but we're at a stage where we're asking, please, can't we just burn a little more? Can't we just lay waste a little more? And then we can be saved? No. Now's the time to get on the bike, turn down the thermostat, ask yourself, like they did in World War II, is this trip really necessary? Every time you get in the car, don't hide under the bed. Two ways to age. My mother and my father handled getting old in completely different ways. My father gracefully let things go. He just didn't ski anymore, didn't play tennis anymore. He didn't declare he wasn't going to do those things. He just let them go. And my mother never stopped painting as long as she lived. I thought they were beautiful solutions. I'm trying to do both. You have been listening to Senior Living on Al Radio. You can listen to Al Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.alradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 this evening. I'm Chrissy Mernon saying goodbye from Al Radio.